Blog Talk Radio.
Hi from the studios, hanging up. Figure out who will be going to match play and who will be going to individual, who will be crowned the individual title. I'm trying to figure this out. Trying to get y'all a update. What was that? And I had up yesterday. Here it is. Okay. Try this. And right now, Georgia continues to have a two-shot lead over Illinois. UCLA right now has built up. Ooh, it's only two now for UCLA. Holding on for dear life to that number eight spot over Georgia Tech. UCLA has had some problems today as LSU's moved up. LSU now in the LSU has built its way up to sixth. They're now up to 15 over par. Concessions playing hard, folks, which is a five-shot lead over eighth, which is UCLA at 20 over par. South Florida is at 16 over par in seventh as they play on. Let me try to get you the individual leaderboard here. I do not have an individual portion here, but obviously. Coordinating the next guest on Team Yet tonight. If they go down the stretch, I'll try to get you guys an update here as we roll on. Stephen Bowditch won the AT&T Byron Nelson. He won it going away yesterday in really impressive style, 27 birdies. This is a guy who won last year. At San Antonio, so obviously Texas treats him well, and has been very successful holding off big names. He held off Matt Kuchar, San Antonio last year, and this week he held off the likes of Dustin Johnson and Zach Johnson. So Stephen Bowditch now is on the positive swing as we look towards the U.S. Open in 3 weeks. Tiger's back this week. Sorry, 2 weeks. Tiger's back this week at Jack's Event Memorial in his return to the tour. And he's today at Chambers Bay getting his first look at what will be a very interesting golf course when the Players face it coming up in 2 weeks' time on Fox and Fox Sports 1. And we'll have Ryan Ballinger on the preview of that and all that good stuff. Mike Radomski. Good friend of the show, teeing it up. He got engaged. We will talk to him about proposing to his girlfriend and other interesting things when we come back. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schlinger on Blog Talk Radio. Here's Bob Costas.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found. Because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
We are back on Teeing Up, and we welcome in live from somewhere in the Midwest, the assistant sports information director for the University of Evansville, the one, the only, Mr. Mike Radomski. Hello, sir.
Hi, Jeremy. Longtime fan, first-time caller here, I think, in 2015.
Possibly first-time caller. You live a very busy lifestyle. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Jeremy.
So here's why I wanted to have you on the show. Last year after his wedding, I've always found weddings fascinating. I've always found the emotional roller coaster of a wedding day fascinating. And our buddy, Mr. Mike Silver, was kind enough to come on my show 48 hours after he said yes, because his honeymoon wasn't happening right then and there, to talk about his experience. And you and Mike have been intertwined basically from the start of my Quinnipiac days and your friendship and your show and coming on my show and all this, and now you're somebody obviously pitched with a wedding in your future, and I wanted to have you on to talk about what that moment meant, because Mike was nice enough to come on and talk about what went through his head on his wedding day. So take us through what happened yesterday, because you've had a very interesting 24 hours.
Yeah, it's been pretty surreal, Jeremy. Going from Minneapolis, where my fiance is from, on vacation, to going right back to work here today on Monday, it was a little unique, to put it at least in that perspective. But it's been a huge blessing. We've gotten a lot of support the last 24 and 48 hours. The story is pretty special too, because I had envisioned doing this during my time in Minneapolis, visiting her and her family. First off, going through proper protocol, asking Papa for his daughter's hand in marriage. So that was an important step. Secondly, also making sure I had the proper location and timing and everything like that. And that got actually delayed a day due to rain. So only fitting a baseball guy like me would get his proposal delayed by a day because of inclement weather. But that's a whole other element to the story. But the neat thing is we still were able to get out the spot on Friday. It's a nice sculpture garden in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Have many impressive artistic sculptures there. And also a nice little pedestrian bridge, which is one of her childhood favorite memories, that spot. So we were able to go through there on Friday. Noticed that, with the inclement weather, she knew I wasn't going to be able to get good pictures of that spot. And I fully had plans to go back there on Saturday and propose. Well, little to be known, she actually said, hey, we should come back here tomorrow. You can get much better pictures when it's more beautiful and sunny. So all I had to do was say, sure, yeah, let's come back tomorrow. And when we did come back on Saturday morning, I was able to take her up to that same sculpture garden and that same bridge. And I was actually waiting for a good moment to take a picture of the bridge with no one on it. And she knew I was searching for that too. So she actually set me up again, because once the bridge was open, she actually tapped me and said, look, the bridge is wide open. Go take your picture now. So I did. I actually dropped down, like Karen Schwanbeck, one of the professors, taught me. At Quinnipiac, you're supposed to get low-angle pictures because it actually resonates a little bit more impactful if you do. So I dropped down to a knee. I took the pictures I wanted. And with her looking away, I placed my camera on the ground, picked up the ring box, and tapped her shoulder. And then Christina looked over in awe, totally surprised, when her boyfriend, me at the time, was just sitting there with a ring on my knee.
First of all, there's going to be a lot of QU people who listen to this and will love the Schwanbeck mention. So that was fantastic. Second of all, it sounds like a lovely proposal. What's interesting about that is so much of proposing is right time, right place, right moment. And then the second part is trying to make sure that if you're not involving that, if there's no family or friends involved, I can document it. Somebody documents it if that's what you wish. And it sounds like from what you told me, somebody was there to capture the moment.
Yes, and I'm not a big social media fan to the point that everything I do has to get documented, like eating a salad or doing other odd things, but it was important to me that we did document it. And when I actually finished asking my question to Christina if she would marry me and, you know, spend the rest of her life with me, she said yes. And within 2 or 3 seconds before I could even, you know, be lifted up from the ground or we could embrace and a hug or a kiss, anything like that, this gentleman came walking up with his dog. And that instant he goes, "Oh my gosh, I've never seen anything like this in person. Can I take your picture?" So we didn't even have that moment to ourselves for any span of time. And immediately this random stranger who was just dog walking decides to help us out and get a picture. So we've got the moment. After fumbling with the camera, he actually took a really nice picture, the one we ended up posting on Facebook. And, you know, we were able to have our moment just a couple of seconds later that day.
That's a lot of fun. It's a great moment. I'm glad that person's there. This reminds me of Andrew Visano's proposal moment in Washington Square Park. Andrew loves taking photos, and the worry when you're somebody who is either a professional photographer or somebody who knows what they're doing is that the person that then takes the photo for you won't, you know, be of the same quality as the photo you would have taken if that was your job. So I'm glad that worked out well for you. You're somebody that likes to be prepared. You're somebody that when you broadcast is so prepared in your preparation and in the work you do talking to players, coaches, officials, etc. The art of proposing and saying what you want to do to somebody who will, you know, be your wife is an interesting concept because you want to say the right thing, and for so many people, emotion takes over. So a twofold question. Number one, how much prep work did you do? And number two, did the fact that you've called so many games and so many big moments help contain your composure when you said to her, you know, will you be my wife?
I'd like to act manly enough and say that I wasn't feeling any butterflies, but that'd be a lie. I definitely had some butterflies, and it was a little bit tougher to go to sleep the night before knowing there was such a special moment in my life happening the next day. But the art of actually just dropping down to a knee, I wasn't nervous because, you know, I'm in love, Jeremy. I knew the girl was going to say yes. I wasn't worried about that at all. I think just making sure that I said what I wanted to, you know, that was important. But to be completely honest, I could have said anything there because I don't think in a situation like that, the person who's being proposed to remembers those words. So jokingly, you know, I could have said anything between macaroni and cheese, Minnesota Vikings, and, you know, Garden State Parkway. I could have said three totally off-the-wall things, and I still feel like, you know, that person may have said yes. Now, obviously, if you do say those things to a girl or whoever, you know, that person is, they're probably not going to have the same response. But in that moment, you come up with this grand, you know, sentence or set of two or three sentences, and that's it. But keep it short, keep it sweet, and then hopefully that person says yes.
Talking to Mike Radomski about his proposal, the now engaged Mike Radomski. You're a guy from Jersey, and you found a girl in the Midwest. Did you ever think that would be your love tale?
No, but that's part of the joys of this thing, Jeremy, is you just kind of go as your life goes. You know, every once in a while you meet someone special, but, you know, things may separate. They may not find you as special or anything like that. But when you find that special person, it doesn't matter where they come from. We just have a neat story because it took a Minnesota girl and a New Jersey boy to meet in Evansville, Indiana, and find happiness.
That's a good point, and apologies if I said Illinois before. I didn't mean to say Indiana. I have a question for you that has nothing to do with this, because obviously your time's short, and I don't want to hold you up asking 10,000 proposal questions. Golf is at a crossroads, Mike. Golf is trying to figure out how can we expand the participant base while keeping the purists happy, but expanding out what golf is, what people consider golf, and who golf encompasses and feels welcome to. You and your now fiance love playing mini golf. Do you consider mini golf golf?
It's not golf in the true essence of going out to the links with your friends or family and playing 18 or 9 holes, that matter. No. But I personally have a deep love for mini golf because I grew up in New Jersey where mini golf is so prevalent, whether it's northern or down the shore. Mini golf meant a lot to me. And also mini golf played a big part in Christina's life because, you know, she's played mini golf a couple times up in Minnesota. Granted, it wasn't in the winter or anything like that, but she played mini golf up there. And then we try to go mini golfing whenever we can. And, you know, just when we were up in Minnesota, we played at Mall of America, and we played up in Brainerd, Minnesota, visiting our good friend Scott Sheehan. So, you know, you got to play mini golf when you can, Jeremy. It's fun. I don't think it's exactly, you know, a sport or exactly golf, but I like to think of it as fun.
There you go. Mike Radomski, congratulations. I know that you must be ecstatic. There must be a lot of different feelings going on in your stomach, anxiousness, excitement, anticipation for what I'm sure will be a fantastic big day. And congratulations and best of wishes to you and Christina and everybody going forward.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Jeremy. You've always been a big supporter of mine, and I definitely appreciate you taking the time for me during this special moment and kind of giving me a little shout-out and plug on teeing it up.
And first of all, my pleasure, and second of all, thanks for calling in shortly after your proposal. It's very kind of you to do.
Hey, you always remember your friends, Jeremy.
That's right. Take care, Mike. Have a good night. Congratulations.
You too, Jeremy. Thanks again.
See ya. We are going to do a 180 here momentarily. We are going to go from a big old 180 momentarily. Here we go. All right. This next guest goes from running TV stations to calling games to somehow loving wrestling. Sorry, nothing personal. And then he graduates, and he's churned out like 5 albums during the course of his college career. We welcome back to Teaming Up, John Alba. John, how many albums have you put out during your college career?
If you count this one, this will be my 2nd full studio album, but if you count other EPs and all that other stuff, it equates to quite a bit of time, a lot of yelling and some sleepless nights, too.
That's interesting. Somehow, you know, academics and athletics and your career went hand in hand. This is John Alba. He is from Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son. And the reason why you're on Teeing It Up is that coming up in the next couple of weeks, there's a new album for you, huh?
Yeah, there is a new album. On July 18th, we'll be releasing our 2nd full-length studio album, The Outskirts. We're going to have a CD release party at the Saint in Asbury Park. And actually tomorrow night on 95.9 WRAT, exclusively, we'll be premiering the first single from the album.
As somebody, and I think there's a lot of people out there who are going to listen to this, especially fans of yours who know how hard you work, and then go, hold on a second, he's running a multi-award-winning campus TV station. He's writing for 10,000 entities. He's doing his academic work. How the heck did you find the time to record and ultimately release a full-length studio album all while performing during this run?
That's a great question, Jeremy. You know, my college career is over now, but it was a blast, and my life never got a break, but I was okay with that. You know, I'm the kind of guy who was okay with starting work at 7 a.m. and then not finishing till 3 a.m. And that's kind of how I've lived my life the past 4 years. And I think in particular with recording this album has been very difficult to put together. We started writing for it about a year ago, and we started in one studio in September. We recorded about half the album, hated what we did, and then restarted in New York City in January. And finished tracking in New York City, and then finished mixing in Spotswood. So it's been quite the experience combined with all what we've gone through, plus what I've done, personally and professionally and all that?
Something about the water in Manhattan obviously
right.
helped this album successful.
That's right.
You're a band that's a lot of moving pieces. You've had some people some people come in, some people come out, and this isn't the forum. This is not the forum to go through that. But I'm just asking from a recording and a musical perspective. So much of good music is chemistry, and it's one thing to perform and change band members and to work through those chemistries inside of rehearsals and performances, but when you're trying to do it in a studio and get a finished product down, all while having new members come in, that whole experience must have been fascinating as well.
Yeah, we did recently undergo a change in bassist. Our original bassist is on the album. All his parts were laid down. No bad blood or anything, just one of those things where he wanted to pursue something else, and, you know, you respect that. But it was definitely some added stress. But all the songs are co-written by Bobby Mahoney and I. And as you're familiar with, Bobby has gotten his legs busy with the Light of Day community and playing with Springsteen. So he's used to, you know, dealing with things on the fly, and it's been quite the experience, I got to say.
You're somebody that takes a lot of pride, John, in the quality of your work.
Thank you.
No matter what it is. And somebody that really focuses on making sure that the final product you put out is the best that it can be. How does this album differ from your last one? And of all the Seventh Son albums and different band iterations, where do you rank this album? And obviously, obviously your most recent work is the work that you feel passionate about because you're about to put it out, but where do you rank this in the Seventh Son history?
Yeah, so we put out our last album, Friends in Low Places, last year, and Friends in Low Places was a very straightforward, every song just kind of had a rock attitude to it, and it was a storytelling album in the sense that there was an actual story to the album. This one is 10 songs that we just feel have properly represented our growth musically. These songs are definitely different. They are much more complex musically. Production-wise, the feel that you're going to hear with this album is that it's very anthemic. We wrote what we think are 10 anthems, 10 rock anthems, and we feel very strong about that. And that's not necessarily everyone's cup of tea. It doesn't necessarily mean the songs are long. The longest song on the album is only 5 minutes long, but there's a very big feel to every single song. And, you know, for a band that is straight up rock and roll, and that's the funny thing, you know, you get a lot of questions like, oh, what's your genre? Are you hard rock? Are you classic rocker? We're rock and roll, you know, just like the Foo Fighters, just like all these great rock bands out there. We want to rock. And that's what I feel this album presents itself as. It's a rock anthem album.
What to you, because so many artists prefer live to the studio. Are you somebody that goes back and listens to your live performances or goes back and listens to your studio albums?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a total live junkie. I mean, all my favorite bands that I've grown up on are known universally as some of the best live bands in the world. Obviously, for those who don't know, I'm a huge AC/DC fan. Foo Fighters are well regarded. You and I both have a extreme passion for Springsteen, who may be the greatest live act in the history of rock and roll. You know, and I think we take a lot of pride in that. Where I think that the studio stuff sounds great, but I think that the best Seventh Son that you're going to get is on stage. And wherever that is, you know, we've gone up to Canada, we've gone through other parts of the East Coast, and later in the year we're planning on going to Germany. You're going to come away saying, wow, that was awesome. That was an awesome stage show. These guys really enjoy what they're doing, and it's genuine, you know.
Yeah, I hear you're 100% talking to John Alba from Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son. Where can people acquire this album when July comes?
Yeah, so the album will be available in hard copy through BobbyMahoneyMusic.com and on Bandcamp at BobbyMahoneyMusic.bandcamp.com. And if they head on out to the Saint in Asbury Park on July 18th, you'll be able to buy the very first hard copies of the album.
What is success for you? What will you look back on if we have you on 6 months from now? What is success for this album?
We're just hoping people hear it and they like it. We filmed two music videos last weekend, and we think they're incredible. We worked with the very talented Zach Morrison, who in Central Jersey and New York City has made a lot of noise with the filmmaking community, and we feel very, very, very positive about the product that we're going to be putting together, and I want people to look back at that and say, wow, these songs rock. I can't wait to see these guys.
John Alba, I appreciate you coming on, and good luck with the new album, and next thing you know, maybe you'll be on the Grammy stage one day.
Can only be so lucky, Jeremy. Thanks so much for having me.
Final thing, and this will just be a 30, 45-second thing. What is your ultimate musical dream?
My ultimate musical dream? I mean, my ultimate musical dream, straight up, is being able to be a rock star for a living. I mean, who wouldn't want to be a rock star for a living? In high school, I played in a cover band, appropriately named Incapable, because that's exactly what we were. But the bassist from that band, this quiet, reserved kid, never really talked a whole lot. Fast forward 4 years, and he's the bassist for a very, very, very popular band named Modern Baseball, who's touring the world now, and they were just on Skate and Surf and Riot Fest, and I mean, they're doing tremendous, and he's getting to live the life, and hey, you know, as much as I love television and journalism and all that stuff, if I could be a rock star for a living, who would pass up on that?
Dreams do come true if you try hard enough. John Alba from Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son, thanks so much for coming on Teeing It Up.
Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
That's it for this week. We will see you next week on the institution that is Teeing It Up on Blog Talk Radio and the Golf News Net Radio Network.